the producers.
What if time travel was real? What if you faced your older self?
You let him run?
What if your survival...
Tell me why I shouldn't kill you right now.
...meant killing him? This September, it's the unexpected journeys that give us hope.
This is my only chance to find out who I really am.
And love brings us home.
You have the power to forgive.
Within the home movies of five murdered families, an ancient evil waits to enter our world. Once you see him, nothing can save you.
Oh my God.
Get the kids.
Jack Frost thinks he's the coolest guardian.
Snow Day!
Maybe it's the freeze ray.
Cool!
Maybe it's his rebel attitude.
Am I on the naughty list?
You hold the record.
Or his movie star looks.
Guys, pull yourselves together. Let's not disgrace the uniform.
But one thing's for sure. When it comes to fighting evil, he's our greatest hope.
Obviously.
Now, I wanted to talk about, though, the Spanish language voiceover. I mean, first of all, that side of the business has been on a large incline for years now, right? I mean, first of all, people are marketing to Spanish language speakers a lot more than they ever were. So I'm yes. sure that work is you know, increasing. Is it increasing for you? Do you feel like you ever get pigeonholed so you kind of avoid it? How do you approach that part of the work?
That's a good question. I'm getting less of it now. I think because I kind of, you know, crossed over for whatever that, mm-hmm. you know, whatever that's worth.
Sure.
So I don't do as much Spanish because I think that what I was interested in, obviously making a living, I realized when I booked my first national network TV commercial was a Spanish commercial for the Army, right? Mm-hmm. And it ran for a year. And in a year, it made like 4,000 or 5,000. And I was like, what's going on? There's a national network commercial running for a year. What's going on? It was because there were only two stations that those things can run on. And they weren't considered, you know, Class A spots. So at that point, I said, you know, I got to do something to transition to English. So I focused more on English. I got a speech pathologist to take a little bit of the New York out of me in the read, at least. So now I can dial it in, dial it out. And so... To go back to your question, it is a growing market, but people are starting to realize that the growing majority of Latinos or Hispanics in this country are U.S. born and speak English and prefer consumption of English language media.
Is that true? Enough. Actually, I did not know that. That's interesting.
Yeah. So while, you know, immigration is a topic that, you know, the news likes to cover and a lot of people like to cover, but the reality is to reach the majority of the Spanish market or the Latino market in this country, you have to kind of speak in English, you know. You should still be informed about the culture, obviously, and that's when, you know, that's for any, speaking to any culture. But we prefer, the majority of us prefer our consumption in English. That doesn't mean that the Spanish language market is not growing, but the bilingual or the English market catering to Latinos is going to be a bigger thing, I believe.
Yeah, that's interesting. Now, to put it in a nutshell, do Spanish language national spots, you know, Latino networks or the like, do they necessarily mean you get less money versus the identical English spot? Or is it all equal? You know, is there any inherent racism
in the
industry? Or
I don't think that there's racism if you compare. I mean, obviously there's racism in this country.
yeah, I guess.
But right. But in terms of rates for these things, the reason that the English language national network spots can make you more money is because they can run on more networks.
Right.
So they can run more. There's just more outlets for it to run, and the more it runs, the more money you make. Also, there's, you know, Class A stuff, so they can sponsor a program more easily than they would on the Spanish side of things.
Yeah. So, but looking at apples to apples, it's an equal scale. I was just curious. I've never looked into that, and so I would hope it would be
apples to apples. Oddly enough, the Spanish pays more.
Oh, is that right?
So they have this Spanish. They have a Spanish rate to try to compensate for the fact that you're not going to make as much money.
Mm.
You know, so they have a Spanish I forgot what they call it, but it's something that almost compensates for the fact that you're not going to make that much money, that it's not going to run on as many things.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
Apples to apples, the Spanish does pay more. But again, of course, it's not all apples.
Yeah, right, right. Sometimes you have a bushel and you have one on the other side. So
exactly.
That's all interesting to learn about. I have not gotten into that subject. But now you're, like you said, you worked for 3, 4, 5 years after getting signed and you feel like, you know, you made it. And now you're on lots of very large platforms. And we talked about this before the interview, but give me a bit of your ratio. You're doing X amount of promo versus commercial versus trailer work, et cetera.
That's interesting. That's not a number that I've run, although I'm a numbers guy. But I can say that off the top of my head, I would have to say it's probably 50 to 60% promo stuff, maybe 20 to 80% trailer stuff, because that's even, it's just tougher to finish on trailer. Although I scratch all the time, and then the rest, maybe commercials. I don't push commercial as much. It's not where my voice lives at the moment, you know?
So you figured out at some point that your bread and butter was going to, lie mostly in the promo world. It does take a lot of effort to build up a good commercial career, I suppose. But the trailer, from what I understand, like you said, you scratch all the time, meaning you're basically doing free tracks in order to try and get the job, right?
It's not free anymore. They've kind of took a stand and have changed that. So I do get paid after, you know, the first scratch. So you're still getting paid. It's just that you can't really use the spot to leverage more spots. You see, my goal has always been acquire the blue chip work. In other words, acquire work that's going to be broadcast or that I can put on my website that hopefully will kind of elevate my career in terms of perception, at least.
Yeah.
So the challenge with trailer is, I basically see almost every major movie come across my desk, and that's in part due to the relationships that my manager has, and of course the relationships that, after being introduced by having, you know, my manager, I've kind of developed those friendships. So they do send me scratches and stuff like that, but after the first scratch, or maybe scratch and a half, let's say, in case you want to do a tag or something, it does become paid. So while I'm making money off of it, it's a lot harder to, you know, to go to finish. Because there's so many layers.
For those of us that have nothing to do with the trailer world, like me, literally couldn't have less to do with that world. But so you are doing the first scratch track for free. That's kind of how it works, right?
Yeah.
Give me an idea.
Yes.
How many trailers you voice versus how many you actually, not even that you book the official trailer, but that you might even get paid at all for.
Oh, I see. You're talking in terms of how many have I done single scratches for free versus how many have I moved beyond to seeing a dollar generated from it?
Yeah, I think it's interesting to know what kind of, you know, how much work there is that comes across your desk, but in reality, you know, what you actually get paid on.
Let's take the Taken 2 stuff, for example, because that was my first, you know, big, recognized campaign, let's say, for home entertainment. The first scratch comes through and for Taken 2, and I might get another one for, I don't know, Rise of the Guardians or something. I can't really remember these things. After you kind of hit send, you train yourself to forget. So between the time that, let's say, I do another Taken 2, I may do 2 to 3 more scratches on something else. So the ones that I only do single scratches on versus more than one scratch on, I would have to say it's probably 1 out of every 6, 7, or 8, you know, that they come back to me and say. Because you have to understand, the studios kind of already know who they want on
right.
their movies.
They're just trying to build up this, not just the scratch VO track, but they're building up a scratch trailer to show people to get it sold, right, essentially.
Well, that's part of it. And they also, you know, they do tests and stuff like that, which is almost like, you know, basically bringing a group of people, get a survey, and they test these things. Not as much, I don't think, for home entertainment as they do for theatrical releases, but they kind of already have, you know, the 2 or 3 main guys in their heads. So, but in the end, what they really want to do is just make money too. So they are, some of them are open to new guys, but it has to be, you have to be competitive. In other words, these guys, they spend all day on the mic, you know, a guy like me, does it in spurts. So I have to kind of force myself to be on the mic even when I'm not doing auditions, scratches, or sessions. Mm-hmm. So that when usually these trailer stuff comes in at night for me because, you know, LA is 3 hours behind.
Yeah.
So anytime between, let's say, 4 p.m. and 10:30 p.m. Eastern time, I can get something from LA that needs to be turned around fast. And I can't afford to not have been on the mic leading up to that point when they give me the scratch. I can't afford to not have been on the mic. So I don't care what it is that I had to read. I just needed to be on mic so that when they send me something, there's no cracking in my voice. There's no warming up to do. I just can jump on, do it, and send it right back.
Interesting. So in your opinion, I mean, everybody knows about warming up. You feel it's that important that you never know what might come in when, you know, on one of these later evenings. Every day you've got to constantly have your voice warm is essentially how you work.
Yes, pretty much.
Yeah.
I have to be on because the guys that I'm, and I hate to say competing with, because obviously they have a leg up, their advantage, the guys that are making seven digits from this stuff,
yeah,
their advantage is that by virtue of where they are in their career, they don't need to warm up once the afternoon comes along because they're already, you know, they're in the zone.
Yep.
You know? So I need to keep myself in the zone all day, despite of what I do, whether that's while I'm eating lunch, a promo comes on, I mimic it, whether that's walking to the store, reading the signs, or I have a playlist of trailers that I have on my, my MP3 player that I'm reading it, or whether that's having a stash of copy. I have a stash of preferred promo and trailer copy that I read in between sessions. Yeah. So I have to keep myself working. Yeah. Yeah.
All right, so that led me to five or six other questions again. But first, you must seem like you're rather crazy out in society if you're voicing stuff as you walk down the aisles of a supermarket.
When you take into account that I hardly shave anymore unless I have to go out to an event, I'm not much, a little bit crazier maybe. Yeah,
that's cool. talk about your work schedule. It sort of, I think that's a good place to go. Are you an early guy too? Because obviously you got to be ready to be on the mic till, what'd you say, 8, 9, 10 o'clock at night? So are you up early too?
10 or 10:30. Yeah, I'm up early. I mean, I have 3 kids. We got to get them off to bed. I mean, off to
the school.
Out of the bed, which is a task in and of itself. So my wife and I kind of wake up early. I would say I get up like anytime between 6 or 6:30 a.m. And I prepare myself, get the kids off. Once the kids are all delivered, well, you know, the
transported
to school, transported, right? I can come back and then meditate a little bit and relax, because it feels like by the time I return, which is like 8:30 or 9 a.m., I feel like I worked an entire day between helping get them dressed, making their breakfast, packing their lunches, you know, dropping them off.
Sure.
So it can get tense. So I can't jump on the mic right after that unless, of course, you know, the specs call for a really pissed off dude. You know, so I kind of have to relax. So I try to be on mic by 10 a.m., even if I'm not needed to be on mic by 10 a.m. But by that time, there are a bunch of auditions that I need to send out and return to my agents at varying times, New York, Chicago, and L.A. But I try to get them all out in the morning by 10, no later than 12 noon, because I know once 1 p.m. comes, 1 p.m. is when L.A. wakes up for me, you know?
Yep.
I know it's going to be crazy. So I have to get the auditions out. And then sometimes there are sessions that are in the morning. But then at like 3 p.m., the kids come home. So I try to book myself out as much as I can, you know. Now with the HBO stuff, they kind of, on Thursdays is when they like to record. I kind of have to slot that out a little bit. But for the most part, I book out my afternoon so I can be here when the kids get home and give them my undivided attention. Jump back on at 4 p.m., for whatever comes in, take a break between 5:30 and 7. Or again, I try to, something comes in. And then from 8 p.m. to 10:30, I'm doing whatever scratches or things come in, especially on Friday nights, which it seems like a lot of the scratches and revisions and things come in.
Hmm. We mentioned before, promo work is your big, big category. And you mentioned, in fact, you just started a new series with HBO. Is that a new series? I'm sorry, I'm forgetting which one it was. Sports Minute or?
It's Sports Minute. It's basically it's their weekly national radio promo, which is different from me doing a promo for radio. But it's still, it's basically a rundown of what's coming up on HBO. that's sports related.
So you're also doing a lot of work with CNN. But anyway, I guess my question is, how much of that, and maybe even in general, of all of your work, how much of it is live sessions? And then how much is it just, hey, here's some copy, read it and send me an MP3? You know, what's your percentages in that
realm? Promo stuff is mostly live sessions. Mm-hmm. They either ISDN or phone patch. It seems like increasingly I'm getting more phone patching. But
is that a fact?
The promo stuff is mostly live sessions.
I've been given to understand that still, you know, especially with like the big four networks, they just do everything live, ISDN, and basically live to tape. Is that not true with HBO, CNN, some of the cable networks?
It's not. A lot of the cable networks are not doing to picture. Most of the networks, if not all of them, are. But, you know, I'm in that point where my career is growing, so I'm kind of dipping my toe into the networks right now. My first big campaign was for the WB with OSIT. And that was my first time that I had to record to picture.
And did you get to practice somehow before you had your first session with them? You know, did you sit in your studio and emulate it somehow?
That's a good question. About a year before that, oddly enough, and this is why you kind of have to remain open to everything that life throws you, right? About a year before that, Joe Cipriano and Zurich invited me to go out to L.A. to do a test run of the Don LaFontaine voiceover lab for a promo workshop that they wanted to start there.
Yeah. That's
so we were going to be like the guinea pigs. So Joe Cipriano had asked Zurich to invite, up-and-coming guys that were already doing promos, but that were up-and-comers. And he said, hey, why don't you come out? I went out there, and we started doing the workshop to picture. I had never done this before. But somehow, I guess, from my timing from producing concert spots, you know, you kind of develop a timing for these things. And my musical thing, I kind of started hitting the marks on the, you know, the beep, 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 and go. And at most, they might let you hear it once.
Uh-huh.
Or they'll play it with a scratch track in there to get the timing, and then next time it's you're on. So I came back. When I returned to New York, I said, man, if I'm going to break from cable to network, I have to practice this stuff, you know, and I'm big on always practicing. So I took a scratch that I had gotten from my agent for Fox. I think it was Sunday Comedies or something. And Fox had provided for the people that were auditioning a non-voiceover spot. I was like, oh, this is perfect. I loaded it up into Pro Tools, and I kind of put my own beeps on it, and I started practicing with that. So I was practicing reading to picture a year before I booked OSIT. So when OSIT came along, those guys, you know, as far as they're concerned, I do this all the time. So that session went
That's great.
A lot smoother than I ever expected, yeah.
I've talked to multiple guys that work a lot, you know, Stu Herrera and Brian Lee and some others. I don't even know what I think. But in your opinion, is that it's a different skill than just being a good voice talent. You have to have a different muscle in
yes.
your brain that you're utilizing. Is that something, if somebody tries it and they are awful at it, can they learn it with practice, or is it something you kind of have to have built into you?
Some people might tell you that you kind of have to do it, and in a sense you do before you're ever on that stage. I'm always one to prepare for stuff, you know, so you kind of have to be able to do that. If you ever book a session like that, and had I messed that up, they wouldn't have come for me for like, you know, 15 or 20 more spots.
Right.
Because I would just slow them down. So I don't believe in having anything built in. I don't believe in that, man. If you look at, there's a book called Talent is Overrated, right?
Okay.
And I know it's based on some other things about the 10,000 hours. I can't remember the name of the book right now. But they always say that once they studied people that mastered certain skills, if they look into their past and they research what they've done prior to that point of being a master in a certain skill or a certain arena, they have accumulated at least 10,000 hours.
Yeah.
So I feel that there is no built-in thing per se. You kind of have to prepare for it.
Okay. So I mean, it's good to hear. I think people will like to hear that. Those that are, you know, aspiring to have that kind of work, because it definitely. If I think about it, I think it'd be something that's difficult to do. You know, no matter how smart you are and how fast you can think and how well you can control your voice, you know, it's a skill. Okay. Cool. So. I'm interested to know if there was, I mean, you talked about working with Maurice Tobias, who anytime we bring up voiceover on this podcast, her name comes up. I interviewed her. She's amazing. You know,
she's great. You know. Yes, she is.
As far as getting sort of the big leaps in your career, though, were there anything else, you know, basically like learning lessons that people can take away from this podcast and say, oh, That's what he did. I got to work on that. You know, that really elevated you to next level stuff.
I think the most important thing is to diss doubt, you know. You have to kind of know. I knew that this is what I wanted to be doing. I didn't just hope or wish for it. I knew that that's what I wanted to do. And then I couldn't sit on my ass waiting for it. You know, I kind of had to get out there. I mean, so there were times that just try things. You know, try it. People are scared now with the internet. Hey, what do you think about doing this? What do you think about doing that? You know, there was a point where I was walking around Manhattan all the way from like 34th Street down to Union Square doing drop-offs, man. I was dropping off CDs in the summer of my demos when I first was looking for that representation. I kind of was just walking around. And you know what? I got called in by a casting director or two. But the point is just keep doing it, because the biggest thing for me was to always just be prepared. You know, I feel like an outfielder. You know, you have to be prepared. But in the meantime, field balls. And the way you field balls, you know, before the big game is you got to read copy, man. You got to read copy and pick a genre that you think you're either going to live in or that your voice works in, and just read it, do it, do it, do it. I mean, that probably doesn't answer your question, but it's kind of like, I can't sit still, man. I got to work. Mm-hmm. If people aren't sending me auditions or people are not booking me, that's no reason why I should not be on the mic. That's basically my philosophy.
I'm not sure if anybody's really said it like that before. And, you know, I've talked to some big timers, and I don't know if anybody's really said it. You know, I mean, you are disciplined, certainly, but the fact that you, even though you have plenty of work coming in and you know, you have big gigs, but you're still constantly voicing. It's interesting to hear that. And obviously practice makes perfect.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's, you know, these guys, I hear guys, you know, I'm in a transition phase, you know. I'm still not to the level that, you know, the big three or four or five guys are, but I'm to the point now where I'm starting to break through. And by, again, like I mentioned before, by virtue of how popular they are, how booked they are, they have the advantage that they do it more than I do, and I can't allow myself to fall behind. So I'm just trying to be on mic so I can catch up. And of course, constantly working with coaches and training helps, because you know we suck at evaluating ourselves. It's like you get an audition, oh, I knocked it out of the ballpark, and then crickets. You get an audition and you tell your wife, oh, babe, I think I bombed it, I sucked, and then they call you for the fact that you booked.
Do you, you already mentioned Zurich's name, another guy I had on the show here, but do you have a few friends in the industry that you like to go to often with, you know, for critique, you know, people you can trust that will make, you know, kick the BS, you know, frilly lines out of the way and really give it to you down and dirty? Do you have a few people like that?
Nah, I don't really like to do that.
Okay. Okay.
I'd rather go to a coach that does that.
Okay.
I know there are some guys that like, and I've, you know, and this is not to knock it at all. It's just that I don't like to do it myself. I know that some people put together, what do you call those things? Not brainstorming sessions, mastermind groups.
Uh-huh.
Where they get together, or workshops where they work out groups for actors or voiceover. They get together, start critiquing each other. The reason I don't like to do that is because I think I'm at the point where I am just starting to discover what it is that I get called for. Mm-hmm. And there's no way that somebody else, as much of a friend that they may be, can understand more than me what it is that I'm trying to accomplish with my reads or where I am, you know? So I don't really, everybody has a filter with which they kind of, you know, perceive everything, right?
Yeah.
And I cannot trust what somebody else's filter is, unless, of course, I'm paying them as a coach, because there's no way that they would have had the same experiences that I did. So that's, I don't really like to do that.
Huh. That's interesting. So as far as coaching goes, I mean, you already brought up Maurice. I guess what I had written down here was to ask you your thoughts on training on a budget. You know, there's going to be a lot more people listening that aren't earning six figures. They're barely even, you know, earning five figures that really some talent. They need to get it. So are there any tips you can offer on training on a budget, or maybe even, I don't know, anything in that realm?
That's a good question, man. I mean, you think about it, right? And you're trying to get into a business that I focus a lot on my time-money ratio, as I call it. You know, I try to keep my time-money ratio as low as possible.
Yes.
You're trying to get into a business with a time that has a time-money ratio that kind of is a lot lower than even some surgeons or physicians or even lawyers. You know, for if you break it down per minute when you're actually getting paid.
Oh, certainly. No, the amount of time you actually work. Yeah, I agree. Yep.
Yeah, so in order to enter a field that is potentially so lucrative, there really is no shortcut. So what I would suggest is if you do have a low budget, instead of going with a coach that only charges you, let's say, $50 or $25 an hour, save up until you get the $100 or $200 that a top coach comes in, and then just train a little bit less frequently with that person. You're going to get a lot more by doing that.
Any other resources that ever helped you out? I don't know. At this point, you may not even bother going to the internet looking for videos about anything. But, you know, any other books or resources that you've stumbled into over the years?
Oh, man, I've read every single thing. I was obsessed with voiceover. if it said voiceover, I was there. I'll give you my money. But
it's
dangerous now because obviously there's a lot more of that.
You probably went to some conferences too. Well, I don't know. I'm not putting words in your mouth. But anything that really stood out then out of all the books you read or any of the things you went to?
I think I just tried to avoid after the first couple of years anything that had that was a voiceover conference. I kind of for me I focused more on learning the experiences of what the person on the other side of the glass goes through. So I kind of focused more on what they were doing, whether it's, you know, the movie trailer guys. There's a book, I think it's called Marketing to Moviegoers. I'll get you the link, but it describes the movie trailer business on their side. And you start to realize what a small percentage of that you are. You know,
mm-hmm.
We all think, you know, everything revolves around us, right?
But of course.
You start to realize what a small percentage of, not only time-wise, but budget-wise you are of that entire picture, that entire multi-million dollar movie marketing industry. So you kind of humble yourself a little bit. And there's also Advertising Age, you know, for those that want to focus more on the
ad age. Yep.
On the commercial. Yeah. And you read a lot of that stuff and you realize what a high turnover those people have. And these guys, they work. They don't sleep, you know. So I think focusing on the industry of the people that are on the other side of the glass is beneficial. That doesn't mean you shouldn't inform yourself as much with voiceover stuff. Fine, buy the voiceover books and stuff like that. But remember, you're helping them out. So if you're going to come in, let's say, quote unquote, as a consultant, you know, voiceover, helping an existing project out, you kind of want to learn about their part of the industry more than you do about yours. Your job is just to make sure that you can interpret the copy and serve the work that they're creating. So I would kind of, but I did, that doesn't mean that I have not read every voiceover book that was ever written.
That's cool. It's great to hear that kind of passion, certainly. Man, we've been, I'm pretty sure you're like me. We could talk forever. I know you got a session coming up. Real quick, your home studio, to be honest, I mean, the pictures you sent me a while ago, I loved the fact that it wasn't all shiny and custom. And, you know, sometimes that can get over the top. What kind of gear are you working with and what do you got going on there?
I'm the kind of techie that gets in under the hood, right? So I'm the kind of techie that tries to ride things till the wheels fall off. I'm not the kind of techie that tries to stay up on the most current products that are coming out. So my computer is a Mac G4, 733 megahertz.
That's awesome.
I kid you not.
That's awesome.
A single processor, 733 megahertz. Why? Well, because I'm only doing one track.
Uh-huh.
And I still, to this day, am running the Digi-001. I am upgrading and looking into this year, obviously, thanks to HBO. In upgrading this finally, but I've gotten my good, you know, 10 or 12 years out of this setup. So I have the Digi-001. I think, what is that, Pro Tools? Dude, what is Pro Tools up to now, like 10?
Yeah, Pro Tools 10, you got 10.3, but...
I gotta look, what is this thing? This has got to be like 5 or 6.
I was gonna say you might be in the 5 range, and...
Yeah. Well, but it is DigiDesign. It's no, you know, it's not Avid.
Yeah, yeah.
Per se, you know, they went back to their mother corporation name, but so I'm running a Digi-001. But I have thousands of plugins, man, which I obviously use you know, and kind of adjust it depending on who I'm doing it for. But my preamp is a Avalon 737 SP.
Yeah, that's...
Which I do use the compressor and the EQ on it slightly to kind of compensate for the room. I have which I call my magic sauce, which is a very affordable expander gate. That also has a compressor, but I don't have it really on. That's the Behringer Composer Pro. I believe it's the MDX 2200. So that is, I don't think I've missed anything.
What kind of,
I'm peeking
what mic are you talking into?
The Sennheiser MKH 416.
The 416, yep, that's.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, definitely one of the top three mics that I hear all the big talents using. And, you know, it's a good investment. And the reason I like it is just because it's real durable. You know, it's like a tank.
Yeah, and it's almost like. It is like a tank, man. Trust me, this thing has been knocked over by my kid so many times. But it really has almost, your stuff almost sounds compressed because, you know, it wasn't even intended to be spoken into this closely. So it sounds almost compressed already. So there's very minimal that you have to do on your end.
Yeah,
when you work with this thing, especially with the Avalon. I like the combination of the two. I had a Neumann U87 that a friend of mine lent me. It was too open for me. If anything, I like the Neumann M149, which is one of the ones that I used to do the MBA spots with when I went into New York to do them. Now I do them from home. But when I was going into New York, it was an M149. And believe it or not, it had a selectable pickup pattern that was almost as narrow, if not narrower, than the 416.
Is that right?
And it was large diaphragm. So I like, yeah, but it's like $5,000-something. And I'm like, you know what? I'll wait till the next HBO contract kind of thing comes along.
Yeah, that U87, man, it's a great mic and a lot of people love it, but you have to have a great room to use that. You can't just really break that out anywhere.
Oh, yeah. People are like, what was that, a cockroach?
Exactly.
Let's do it again.
Did someone sneeze a city away? Because I heard it.
Yeah. That's like, yeah. I think the traffic light just turned green. Let's do that again. Yeah.
That's cool. So what about your data? I mean, are you still using the internal hard drive? We got 100 megabyte hard drive on that thing? Or
it's funny, I always wanted to keep my operating system separate from the audio, obviously, but at the time you only had USB and FireWire. But I bought a SCSI. Do you remember SCSI?
Uh-huh.
The interface?
Oh yeah.
So at the time it was very popular with music stuff. So I bought a SCSI card, which was the Adaptec, and I think that was like $400 or $500. And then I bought a Seagate SCSI Barracuda drive, but those are all internal. So I'm recording to the Seagate Barracuda drive.
Okay. Oh, all right.
I don't even know if they make those anymore.
Do you, I mean, you don't really have a ton to keep archived, but do you keep all of your sessions archived, or how far back do you go on, you know, your audio files?
30 days. I have a habit of, deleting stuff 30 days.
Yeah.
You have to understand, I have two partitions, about 8 gigs each. And it's helped me keep it a little clean and organized because I do keep demos or finished work, but I don't keep sessions or bounced files for more than 30 days. I don't care what it is.
Mm-hmm.
30 days should be enough if you want to call back and do an update or a pickup or something.
You're doing zero production. Would that be a true statement?
That's correct. Yeah, zero production.
Yeah.
They still try to get me to do it, but it's so time consuming. I just don't have the time for it, man.
No, that's a great problem to have. You get to a point where the voiceover work is so much you can't do anything else. You know, that's
yeah,
very good.
Yeah.
Well, cool, man. I wanted to get those details out. People are always curious, you know, on the gearheads, the audiophiles like to know what you're using.
Yeah, I don't think anybody's gonna rush out and buy what I have right now.
Hey, man, when you want to upgrade your computer to something from 2008 or so, you let me know. I can give you some tips.
Exactly. Yeah, thank you.
But you know what's cool though is you are going to come from an era where there was just about nothing for home digital recording, and now there are so many options. You're probably just going to have an aneurysm when you try and decide what you want.
I'll probably say Pro Tools, man.
So you're going to go with like the Digio 3 rack? You're going to go with something simpler?
It'll be a rack, just because that's how I'm set up here. There's no desktop space, as you saw from the pictures.
Let me ask you one final question before I let you go. I know time is getting slim here, and you probably have already answered this, but I like to ask for one key piece of advice, and in your case, it'll be for the up-and-coming voice talent that wants to be the big superstar like you. You know, what's the one thing you would recommend they do?
I always say just keep working, man. Get on the mic and keep working. I don't believe in branding or marketing as much as I believe in making friends, man. Everybody wants to work with somebody who they enjoy and has a good time with. So just get out there, understand what the other people are going through in terms of those guys that stay in, making you look good, basically the editors and producers and writers. Understand what they go through. You come in for a few seconds and you leave. So understand what they go through. Befriend those people. You know, it's not being slick. I'm not saying befriend them so that they can, you know, hire you. It's just that I found that, you know, this is not a diss to my voiceover friends. I find their perspective a lot more interesting than when you get together with a group of voiceover people and everybody just wants to talk about voiceover. You know, there's so much more to life, man. And the voiceover talent that I connect with, we connect on several different levels, whether it is talking about tech, whether it is talking about beer, family, being a father, you know, raising girls, raising a boy, marriage, or vacation. You know, it's so much more to it than that.
Yeah, cool, man. That's awesome. You're a very good guy, very talented, and thanks so much for being on the podcast.
Hey, thanks a lot, Ryan, man. Same to you, man. Appreciate it.
Hi, this is Jim Lampley. Every sport has a champion. Every champion has a journey. Every journey has a story. Check out what's coming up on HBO.
It's a light heavyweight title showdown on HBO's World Championship Boxing when champion DeForest Clough defends his title against the legendary Bernard Hopkins. And in a heavyweight showdown, Chris Arreola squares off against Bermain Stiverne. Live Saturday, March 9th at 9:30 p.m. Eastern and Pacific. Then, on HBO's World Championship Boxing, undefeated welterweight champion Timothy Bradley makes his first title defense when he takes on top contender Ruslan Pravodnikov. Live Saturday, March 16th at 10:15 p.m. Eastern and Pacific. Plus, HBO's Boxing After Dark returns with an explosive night of boxing when undefeated junior welterweight Brandon Rios looks to claim his second world title when he takes on knockout artist Mike Alvarado in a rematch of last year's Fight of the Year candidate. Live Saturday, March 30th at 10:15 p.m. Eastern and Pacific. Only on HBO.
For all the stories, there's only one arena, HBO Sports.
All right, thanks again to Anthony. A nice hour chunk of his busy day where I got to be honest, I learned every one of these episodes. I feel like I learned something I hadn't heard before. That one, he had some very interesting takes on how to practice and how to be better at your craft. So hopefully you enjoyed it as well. If you want to check him out, anthonyvo.com, anthonyvo.com. Also some links on the actual podcast page on my website. So you can go, I think he sent me some photos and I'll post his demos again. So anyway, anthonyvo.com. Thanks again to Anthony Mendez. One more mention about the new product from Sample Logic and Rick Allen. It's called Assault, a radio imaging producer's dream. I love the sounds that you can just pull out of it instantly. It works within Kontakt. Kontakt is free. If you get Assault, I think Kontakt still has their free version, but regardless, you pay, I believe right now the price is only $250. Well worth it, because you're going to spend more than that on just a radio imaging sound design library, and it doesn't have a fancy plugin that you can pop into Pro Tools or Audition or Logic or Ableton or whatever. And you can use it as an instrument. You can make beats, cinematic music with it, crazy, you know, gunshots and crashes and comedy sounds and just a lot of wild stuff in there. So I'm pretty excited about this, especially for Mr. Rick Allen. But hang for it's nice. I recommend you do it. But if you'd like to wait a little bit, I'll be giving away. The guys at Sample Logic said, hey, man, you can have a free one. Give it away. And so I'm going to do it. In the next couple weeks, it'll be essentially mid-March of 2013, depending on when you're listening to this, throughout the end of March. We'll have an easy way for you to enter to win your own free copy of Sample Logic's Assault from Rick Allen. So be checking over at the blog. I made a big post about it. So if you want to get more information about Sample Logic's Assault, you can see all about it on the website, ryanontheradio.com. Otherwise, I think that's enough for now. Plenty more podcasts coming up. I have lots of cool people on my list to talk to. I will say one more time, if you have questions, comments, concerns, or requests on the podcast, please send them my way. I'm on Google, Ryan Dreen, one word. It's ryandreen@gmail.com. I'm all over that. Otherwise, until next time, bye.
This is The Producers. Have a question, comment, or concern? Email Ryan at ryanontheradio.com. The Producers. Thanks for listening.